Hi, everyone. This is Aaron Larson, executive editor of Power Magazine, and you're listening to the Power Podcast. On today's episode, I'm joined by Nick Chassett. He is the CEO of East Bay Community Energy. So, Nick, thank you so much for joining me. Can you tell a little bit about yourself and what East Bay Community Energy is?
Thank you, Aaron, again for the invitation. East Bay Community Energy is the community choice energy agency that serves 15 communities in the East Bay of the broader Bay Area. Cities like Oakland, California, Fremont, California, Livermore, California, Berkeley, California. I could keep going, but it'll take a little while to rattle them all off. We provide retail electricity service to our customers in these 15 communities. We serve about 95% of customer accounts. That's about 1.7 million people. We were formed by local governments to provide customers with a choice in their electricity service. And so we started operating in 2018, giving residential, commercial, and municipal electricity users the ability to choose between our service and that of PG&E's. All of our customers, though, remain customers of PG&E for transmission and distribution services. So for those customers, we jointly provide service with the incumbent investor-owned utility. Our mission is to provide cleaner, lower-cost electricity to all of our customers, while also finding ways to make significant local clean energy investments. So to do that, what we offer are two products. One is a product that is priced 3% below PG&E's electricity rate and is set to be roughly 5% on average more renewable than what PG&E typically offers. And then we also offer a 100% renewable energy product. That is a product that is currently opted into by about 120,000 accounts. So about 20% of our customers are on 100% renewables, making East Bay Community Energy one of the nation's top five suppliers of 100% renewables.
It's great to hear that you're supplying clean energy to these communities. Is this arrangement something that was kind of unique to California in that you could create this community choice agency and provide power in substitute of PG&E, or how did this all come about? Was there some legislation passed that made this possible?
Yes. In 2002, in the wake of the California energy crisis, the California state legislature put in place a new set of regulations allowing for the creation of these new public electricity suppliers. The thesis being that it, one, would allow the investor utilities to continue to focus on their core business, which is owning and operating transmission and distribution infrastructure. So in California, that's also where investor utilities make their profits. It's not on the sale of electricity, but on invested capital. And it would also give local governments more say and control over achieving environmental and clean energy goals. So the legislation took effect in 2002. The first Community Choice Energy Agency was formed about 7 years later in Marin, with Marin Clean Energy. And then Community Choice has grown significantly across California since then. Roughly 10 million Californians are currently served by the 15 plus community energy agencies that operate from San Diego all the way to Humboldt County and out to Placer County. So we really cover, at this point, all of the geographic, economic diversity that there is in California. There are community choice energy agencies that operate in other states, states like Massachusetts, Ohio, Illinois do have versions of community choice. The major difference, though, is that in California, when a local government creates or joins a community choice energy agency, 100% of accounts in that jurisdiction default onto the community energy agency service, which is a really powerful tool to get scale, as opposed to, say, Illinois or Ohio, where the agency then is created, but then customers have to actually choose to opt in. As you can imagine, that can be quite a slog and quite time consuming to go and acquire hundreds of thousands of customers for a service where, unfortunately, though I spend my time always thinking about electricity, the average consumer does not spend a lot of time thinking about electricity supply.
Yeah, I can see how that would be a problem if you have to sign up individual customers. Getting to scale would be very difficult. So I think the California model seems more beneficial for the community choice agency. Was there any pushback from PG&E? I mean, I can imagine if you're losing a lot of customers to a community choice agency that it might not be good for your business. Were there difficulties for member communities to step away or break away from PG&E?
In the early days of community choice, there was definitely friction between some of the early communities seeking to form CCAs and PG&E. That has not been the experience for East Bay. We started our process of forming our Joint Powers Authority in 2016, and I joined in 2017 as the first employee and CEO. And, you know, while certainly not every facet of our relationship with PG&E is always perfect, I would say the vast majority of the time, it's a pretty professional relationship, really focused on serving our joint customers. And, you know, I think that that is one, a function of the scale that CCAs have achieved in PG&E's territory. 55% or so of their transmission distribution customers are also served by CCAs. So we've reached a tipping point in Northern California. And, you know, I think another important dynamic is the fact that PG&E does not profit from the sale of electricity. So when PG&E loses a bundled electricity service customer to CCA service, that does not erode profitability because the profitability comes from the return on invested capital in infrastructure.
Yeah, I can see how that would make it a little bit easier to see customers transition if you're still getting paid for the transmission and distribution. I imagine East Bay Community Energy has evolved over time. Did you have all of the communities that you currently serve when you first originated in 2018, or have you added along the way?
So when we started operations in 2018, we had 12 of our 15 communities. So 80% or so of the load and the customer base we serve today joined at launch. And then in 2021, we added three more cities to our service.
Is there potential for more growth, or have you kind of tapped out your area there?
We are still working on potential further expansion. We have been in conversations with cities like Stockton, California, about potentially bringing them into our Joint Powers Authority and starting to serve that community. And that's where we're focused today, though future expansion is certainly possible as well.
So thinking about that, is this a model that you could see expanding to other areas outside of California? You mentioned Ohio and Illinois and some of these others, but do you think the whole nation could eventually convert to something like a community choice power agency?
You know, I think it's a model that is certainly under consideration in a lot of different places. States like Oregon, Colorado, New Hampshire are three that I know are actively evaluating putting in place legislation to allow for the formation of community choice energy agencies. And so it's been something that I spent some of my time working on and supporting things like model legislation. But for us, you know, we're very much focused on California and really Northern California specifically because of, you know, our mission, which is to provide clean energy solutions and investments in our communities. And, you know, expansion beyond the communities that we currently serve erodes some of the ability of local governments and the continuity and coordination that's happening beyond, outside of electricity to occur.
I see. You mentioned what your mission is. What are the benefits that you see specifically coming out of your agency in the communities that you support and provide power to? What are the biggest benefits that they see from you?
There are three categories of benefits that we really focus on. One is cost savings. So since we started operations in 2018, we have delivered upwards of $30 million in bill savings to our customers relative to what the cost of electricity from PG&E would have been if they had stayed on that service. The second is clean energy. So we have delivered higher levels of renewables over the course of our operation. On average, since we started operating in 2018, I believe we're somewhere in the 5 to 7% more renewable range. And you know, that can be more or less than that average, depending on how much renewable energy PG&E ends up actually buying. But you know, on average, it's been in that 5 to 7% more renewable. And then one of the things that really differentiates East Bay from not just incumbent utilities, but you know, to some degree, even some of the other community energy agencies operating, is our real emphasis and focus on investing in clean energy locally. For us, that has meant everything from building a large wind farm in Livermore, California, which is one of the communities that we serve. So we have a 57 megawatt wind farm that started operations in 2021. We are also building virtual power plant projects that integrates just over 1,000 residential solar and storage systems to provide consumers both clean energy and resiliency, and provide us with batteries that we can use to meet our broader customer base's electricity demand. And we're also investing in programs like electric vehicle charging stations. So we have two large fast charging stations that we're currently working to build, and have plans to build a broader network of fast charging stations across the 15 communities that we operate in.
Very interesting. And so some of these solar plus storage installations that you're working with customers to integrate into the system, are those programs that you actually do the installation, or is that something where they get the installation and then they kind of come to you to do the marketing and control of it?
We have a partnership with a solar installer for our virtual power plant program. We're working with Sunrun. So we are coordinated with Sunrun in things like marketing of the program. They are doing their organic marketing through their various channels. We're also doing marketing to our customers on behalf of Sunrun to sign them up for this program. Sunrun then provides the installation. In some cases, they provide financing. In some cases, the customer will buy it themselves. And then we pay Sunrun a monthly fee for the rights to be able to use their batteries for our wholesale power needs. That stream of payments that goes to Sunrun helps to improve the value proposition they can offer their customers.
We often hear about the California duck curve and how, you know, you have different demands throughout the day based on the solar generation and things. So how have the batteries helped you to kind of manage that? Has it been a positive outcome?
Yeah, I would say for California, generally speaking, absolutely. You know, we have several thousand megawatts of batteries that have been built over the last year or two, and they've undoubtedly provided important reserves to help manage the grid and help ensure reliability, particularly on some of those really hot days. And so, you know, they're a huge part of the grid and reliability for California. For us specifically, we have a number of very large batteries that are currently in construction, and a couple small battery projects that are currently in operation. So I wouldn't say batteries today for East Bay provide a major source of reliability, because we don't have a lot of operating batteries just yet, but they're coming really starting this year. And into 23 and 24, we'll have several hundred megawatts of batteries online. And I would expect that at that point, they're going to play a really significant role in helping us manage the debt curve, manage costs, ensure reliability.
And you kind of mentioned that you've been in discussions with regulatory agencies and talking to people about policy. What sort of things do you think are necessary to help renewable energy continue to grow throughout the state of California and throughout the country? Is there certain policies that you think are necessary?
Absolutely. Policy is a critical lever to supporting the clean energy transition. I can think of three or four really key ones. While California certainly has more work to be done to enhance our clean energy policy, California has also been where many of these policies have been initially developed. So actually, I would focus today on federal actions that can have really significant impacts in accelerating not just renewable energy, but really accelerating cost-effective energy. And I say that because today, solar power and wind power are the cheapest sources of electricity generation out there. And so we want more clean and cheap electricity. And we have the opportunity to accelerate that through a handful of actions. Certainly important and top of mind for me are extensions of the investment tax credit and the production tax credit for wind and solar. I also believe that expansion of the investment tax credit to cover energy storage is a really critical policy, as is modifying the structure of those credits to make them fully refundable. Today, East Bay Community Energy as a public agency is not able to monetize the investment tax credit. And so it makes it quite difficult for us to directly own renewable generation. We have to work with third parties who do have the ability to monetize the investment tax credit. If they were to make it fully refundable, though, East Bay could own the generation. And that is beneficial because as a public agency, we have the ability to raise public debt that is lower cost, which in turn further makes renewable energy less expensive and more economically competitive. I also believe strongly that we need to firm up our domestic supply chains for these generation technologies. So federal action to invest in storage manufacturing, lithium manufacturing and extraction, solar panel manufacturing, all really important policies that were part of the Build Back Better, which at this time, unfortunately, is on hold, but hopefully we'll be able to get back to that. And the last policy, and this is something we are very focused on here in East Bay, is the nexus between what we do, which is generate and sell clean electricity, and transportation electrification. And so I strongly believe more aggressive action at the federal level to invest in charging infrastructure and domestic manufacturing of electric vehicles is a really critical step forward for our clean energy revolution.
And speaking of federal actions, we just recently had a Supreme Court decision that kind of limited the EPA's ability to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. What do you think that will do in the future for renewables and for clean energy? Do you think we're taking a step back and it's going to really cause some problems here?
It's certainly a step back. Any actions that limit the ability of our federal agencies to directly address climate pollutants are going to be harmful for our economy and harmful for our country. And so what the Supreme Court decided to do in West Virginia versus EPA undoubtedly is a step backwards. That being said, in the same way that the challenges that were made to the Clean Power Plan under Obama were undoubtedly negative, they were largely made up for by state actions to advance clean energy policy. In electricity in particular, much of the policy power lies with state public utility commissions. And so continued emphasis and focus on clean energy policy in California and other states, I believe, can go a long way to offsetting the detrimental effects of the Supreme Court's actions. I also strongly believe that greater regional coordination in the grid between states like California and Oregon and Washington and Nevada can play a really significant role in further accelerating clean energy across the country.
Well, Nick, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast. Is there anything else that maybe I haven't brought up that you'd like to discuss before we close this up?
No, I really appreciate it. Thank you for the invitation.
All right. Again, for listeners, I've been speaking with Nick Chassett. He is the CEO of East Bay Community Energy. Thank you.
All right. Cheers.